operator, AEMO. Now, those cooler weather conditions also saw less wind and more rainfall in southern states, reducing the power output from wind and hydro. So we saw less rainfall. So we saw less wind and less rainfall in the southern states, and that reduced the power output from wind and hydro. Now, this comes as well as the Australian Energy Regulator says planned and unplanned network outages also contributed to the higher electricity prices. So there's a bit going on here. Let's get more on it. Tim Buckley is an energy analyst and the director of Climate Energy Finance. He joins us now live. Hi, Tim.
Good morning, Sarah.
I guess my first question would be, is why when demand for power goes up, like it did in that cold snap, that the power prices go up too?
Sarah, it is a complex system we have, an energy system. It has complexities, but I would like to reframe the way you introduced it and the way you introduced exactly what AEMO said, so no disrespect to you. Electricity demand in Australia, according to the AEMO report, has flatlined for the last 8 years. So this is not a demand-driven event. AEMO quotes five factors. One of them is lower wind production and lower rainfall. Now, rainfall, that's related to climate change. Okay, not everyday rainfall, but over time, hydro production was down 10, 20%. That is a serious problem. But AEMO highlights there were major transmission outages, and that was the reason why we had a scenario that ended up causing massive sustained power prices across New South Wales in particular, but across the NEM. So there were planned outages, but then we had unplanned coal-fired power plant breakdowns. And so I would point out there's no demand spike. It is the unreliability of end-of-life coal-fired power plants. And then on top of that, there was gaming. So let's talk about what's gaming. It means that companies, and AEMO actually names and shames AGL Energy and Energy Australia, both deliberately repriced their capacity from low to high prices, particularly for their Bayswater and Mount Piper power stations, knowing that there was a grid transmission outage that was being planned and warned to them for months. They just happened to have major units. And then, of course, Eraring's an old coal-fired clunker. It had breakdowns. And so let's point number one, it's not about demand. This was a low demand period. It was all about the unreliability of coal so that when it was most needed, it wasn't available. And then the gaming of the system, I would put number two. AEMO has it in there, but they put it number five. So when AGL and Energy Australia banked their bonuses this year, everyone in New South Wales in particular can thank the CEOs of those two companies for gouging us.
So I can see how all that adds up, but surely the fact that we also had less wind and we didn't have enough water for our hydro systems also played into this.
Oh, absolutely. There were five factors, and I've just outlined all five of them, whereas AEMO emphasises there was a low wind period. Well, let's point to the real culprit. It's the fact that major coal-fired power plants that are systemically important are 40 and 50 years of age, and they're unreliable, and their owners deliberately or unplanned, are shutting them down when we most need them.
Okay, so that's sort of the five reasons that you're outlining there. We know that these coal fire power stations are to a degree coming to the end of their lives, whether they want to or not, because we're obviously in the midst of trying to phase out coal fired power. But
no, they're actually end of life.
I know what you mean. That's exactly right.
Phasing them out for climate reasons, they are not reliable because they were only designed to run for 40 years, and yet we're now relying on 45-year-old plants 5 years beyond their useful life. And the government, particularly the previous government, hasn't allowed the system to build replacement capacity ahead of the closure of those coal-fired power plants.
Yeah, and that's the point I'm getting to. Of course, I'm aware that they're coming to the end of their actual life. At the same time, we're also trying to phase them out. And then we have a capacity problem because we don't seem to have enough renewables to replace them. Is that going to be our future problem?
That is today's problem, and that is, you nailed it, we absolutely need replacement capacity. Now, we have a climate crisis, we have an energy crisis, and we have a cost of living crisis. We can solve all three of them by building renewable energy. We've known that for a couple of decades. But of course, if we can't actually get them through the planning approval system, you can't get new capacity in. And there's no way investors will invest, private investors will build new thermal capacity, because they're very aware their investors are demanding they have a path to decarbonisation. And so you've got this squeeze going on where we, the consumer, all pay the price, because investors won't build new thermal power, but they can't build new renewables. We need the government to step in and say, we know energy affordability, cost of living, and the climate crisis, they're very obvious, they're very immediate. We need to actually treat them seriously and have a government response that actually accelerates approval, evaluation and approval of replacement capacity. We've been stuffing around for a decade waiting for the government to actually approve new capacity. And in New South Wales, it takes 10 years to build a wind farm. In Europe, they just said, overriding rule, national interest, we need low-cost, reliable energy. You have a maximum of 1 to 2 years to approve any new major renewable energy project. Evaluate and approve or disprove it, but don't stuff it around for a decade waiting. Consumers can't afford it.
How flexible is wind once we get it up and running, in the sense that, am I right in saying that you can actually ramp up energy from coal and gas plants, but is it difficult to ramp up energy when you have a spike or high demand when we're talking wind and solar?
What we are needing to do is modernise the grid for the grid technologies available today. The grid, if it was modern and we'd invested in it and we'd built sufficient capacity, would be more reliable than it was. And we know that because the coal plants are very unreliable. That's the number one reason we've had extreme power prices in the last 2 months. But at the end of the day, we saw AEMO's report also notes that batteries set the pricing 23% of the time versus just 7% of the time 1 year ago. We're building the biggest batteries in the world. We can build a battery in 18 months, and we're building about 10 of them across Australia. That is the solution. You have low-cost renewable energy. You have firming with batteries. You have grid, interstate grid transmissions that actually work. And I'll point the finger at Transgrid. They've just yet again announced that their major interconnect they've been planning for almost a decade is not on schedule. They just lost the contractor who's actually building it because they've lost too much money because of planning problems, labour supply problems, incompetence, you name it, everything. And we, the consumer, pay the price for that incompetence.
Tim, I'm sure you and I could talk a lot longer, but time is against us this morning. Thank you so much for your insights.
Brilliant. Thanks, Sarah.
Tim Buckley, an energy analyst and the Director of Climate Energy Finance. Okay. We better cover some other news off this morning as well. We've been doing a lot on energy this morning. So I want